Welcome to Wildlife Rehabilitation from Rescue to Release, a podcast dedicated to licensed wildlife rehabilitators and the veterinarians who support them. I'm your host, Gail Buell.
Techniques we discuss here are meant for licensed wildlife professionals. If you aren't licensed and trained for wildlife rehabilitation, do not attempt to capture, hold, or rehabilitate any wild animal. If you find an injured wild animal, a wildlife professional can recommend next steps. We will tackle topics about rescue, care, management, reconditioning, and releasing wildlife found in North America. This is a deep dive into each subject. We hope to give rehabilitators information they can use because they're already going to great lengths to rescue and nurse animals back to health. There are three possible outcomes in wildlife rehabilitation: release, euthanasia, and placement. An injured or orphaned wild animal's journey to restored health and independence in their natural habitat is delicate and complex. We draw techniques and expertise from many disciplines. Many animals brought into rehabilitation cannot be saved. The last gift we can give them is humane euthanasia. We'll talk more about when this is necessary. Sometimes animals are deemed non-releasable and evaluated to be suitable for a life in captivity. When that happens, we shift to a long-term approach to managing their care, training, and housing. Some such animals serve as ambassador animals, a term for animals that rehabilitators use to educate the public. Each episode, we'll speak with experts who represent specialty topics across the profession of wildlife rehabilitation, ambassador animal care and management, showcasing best practices. Welcome back, everyone. This is part one of a recent in-depth talk I had with a veterinarian here in Minnesota who has cultivated a very unusual but critical niche, wildlife dentistry. I'll be back with the second part of our discussion later this month, so stay tuned. Well, I am very excited today. We're going to talk about teeth. We have Dr. Leslie Reed here, and she is a phenomenal veterinarian, wildlife veterinarian, but she has specialized in teeth. And that's what we're going to talk about today. So welcome, Dr. Reed.
Thank you.
Dr. Leslie, we're so excited that you're here. For everybody, could you give them just a little bit of your origin story?
Sure.
How did you get to this point?
Yeah, so I grew up in West Des Moines, Iowa, and went to Iowa State for my undergrad and my vet degree. And I actually started at a small wildlife center in Iowa, at Iowa State. The Wildlife Care Clinic, mm-hmm. Yes. So started there as a student volunteer, worked my way up to a staff member, and I was there for 5 years in total. And that's kind of how I found my calling for wildlife medicine, my little niche there. And so I knew at that point I definitely wanted to do wildlife. Definitely have an interest in marine mammals, so I thought for a minute maybe I wanted to be a marine mammal vet. And did a couple internships in California working with sea lions, seals, dolphins. Absolutely loved it. But also really realized how much I love the variety of wildlife that we see in the Midwest. I loved the raptors. I loved all the different mammal species and turtles and bats. And so I kind of realized that I want to do a little bit of everything. You know, maybe we'd get a sea lion in Iowa, maybe not.
We'll
see.
But maybe
unfortunately,
not.
We don't see a lot of marine mammals in the Midwest, but that's right. Okay. I did some volunteer work at the zoo in Des Moines, so I was able to get some pinniped exposure there. But yeah, so I was at the Wildlife Care Clinic for several years and then went on to vet school there at Iowa State. And it's kind of interesting because when you're in vet school, there's just so much information thrown at you at once. Uh-huh. It's really difficult, at least for me, to get really excited about one specific thing, like dentistry, because there's just so much. Right. And so you kind of feel like each thing you have to learn is you're obligated to learn all of these things. And I knew I wanted to do wildlife. And at that point, I honestly was like, I don't really need to know much about dentistry, right? To do wildlife rehab. It just wasn't really in my brain at that time. And after I graduated from Iowa State, I started at the Wildlife Rehab Center of Minnesota. Mm-hmm. So I graduated, started 2 weeks later as a vet there, and spent, you know, the next 13 years of my profession there. And I quickly realized, you know, early in my career there, how important teeth really are and how many animals were actually coming in with dental issues and with trauma, mm-hmm. especially. And so at that time, I really had no experience doing a lot of dentistry. So we would take the animals that were injured to Blue Pearl, and their vets would help us out kind of on pro bono with dental issues. And that's really where I found my interest in teeth.
Wow.
And one of my mentors there, Dr. Danelle Hansen, got to do a shout out for her, board certified. She's amazing. And she's just so excited about dentistry. And she really kind of sparked that within me and took me under her wing. And I just got really interested in it. And I just thought, I can do this. You know, this is something that I can learn how to do, and I can help these animals. So then I started doing some dentistry at WRC. We didn't have any tools at the time, so we had to raise some money, and we had, you know, a donor come forward and buy some tools for us, and then we had to get a drill and all the fun things.
Sure.
And once we were able to get that, I just really kind of took it and ran and did a lot of CE courses, hands-on workshops and labs, learning how to do proper dental extractions and anesthesia blocks and all of those things. And my passion for dentistry has just grown since then. And so now I'm able to really help these critters that really need dental attention. So it's been a fun kind of journey getting to that point. But I honestly, you know, 10 to 15 years ago, I never would have guessed that I would be this interested in teeth.
Right.
But now knowing how important they are and seeing what a, you know, difference it makes for animals, it's just, it's something I'm really passionate about now. So,
oh my gosh, this is so amazing.
Yeah.
And a couple things that I just want to call attention to is mentors. Good mentors can be everything when you're trying to.
Absolutely.
You're getting interested in a subject, right? Yes. They can help guide you or where to look or what to do and spark that.
Yes.
Just
get you excited
interest.
About it.
Get you excited about it. And also, I want to give a shout out that. And certainly not every veterinarian clinic can do this, but that they did some pro bono work, which was very, very nice of them to do that.
They loved it.
And they loved it. Yeah, they got something out of it too, which is great. But
we're so appreciative.
Yeah, those two things, the mentors, are incredibly important on the journey. And the other thing that I've expressed on the podcast before, and I've experienced too, it's a crooked path.
Yep, it is.
It's not. Very few people I know is like, oh, this is what I want to do, and then that's what they end up doing for their whole career.
Absolutely. And, you know, I'm definitely proof of that. I, you know, was in wildlife full-time for 13 years, and then I started mingling in some small animal.
Uh-huh.
And now I actually do small animal medicine full-time, but wildlife on, you know, a relief basis, doing dentistry, continuing to do that for WRC. And so, again, just a few years ago, I never would have thought the path would take me there, but it's actually been great because I get to do dentistry at the small animal clinic on a weekly basis, and that helps me keep my skills up to be able to help the wild animals too. So I really feel like I'm in a point in my life now where I kind of have the best of both worlds.
Yeah,
that's
great.
Oh,
that's the best. That's the best feeling. Well, my gosh, again, thank you for coming in
today. Yes, of course.
Because I heard you did a lecture for the State Organization for Minnesota on dentistry, and I was absolutely blown away. It was amazing. And I, you know, and yes, I've always done teeth, you know, looking at teeth and teeth exams, but I really learned so much from that lecture and have gone back to it actually. Even though I haven't had to do, I've gotten in birds lately. I haven't looked at any mammal teeth, but it just was really, that's what I love about wildlife rehabilitation as well, is there's always something new to learn. There's always new best practices, all of those kinds of things. And this was one of those moments. So I did tell myself that I was going to contact you right away and get you on the
I'm
podcast.
I'm glad you did.
Because I think everybody is are also going to be blown away by this.
Yep.
So I thought we would start just at the basic level, like, why are teeth important?
Right.
And who has them?
Yeah, that's a great question.
Yeah.
Yes. Who has teeth? Well, obviously we know mammals have teeth, right? And we have some reptiles that have teeth as well. So snakes, for instance, have lots of little teeth in there. Some fish, terrifying, but there are fish with teeth. Haven't done any fish work, I'm going to be honest.
probably
won't,
closer,
but you know.
Closer to marine mammals,
that's true.
Though,
that's
right?
Very true. That's very true. Yes, maybe I'll get, you know, yeah. Maybe I'll get a giant fish in that needs some dental work. But so yes, you know, mammals are obviously the one that we think of the most when we think of teeth and dentition and, you know, the animals that do need the most attention when it comes to wildlife, I guess, that have dental, you know, care needs. So, you know, when we're thinking about teeth, obviously we got to start with basics. We got to know basic anatomy of a tooth, and what they're used for, what their functions are for. And, you know, when you think about teeth, I mean, obviously most people are going to say, okay, you use them to eat, right? Yeah, mm-hmm. We use our teeth to eat. But there are many different reasons that wild animals use their teeth that we just don't tend to think of. Right. So a couple examples would be gathering materials to make a nest or a den. So if you think about like a beaver that needs to grab big sticks and logs and carry those to make, you know, their dam. If you think about, you know, different types of, you know, little rabbit species that are gathering their fur, gathering leaves, gathering grass to make their nest. And so they're using those teeth to gather those objects to make their area where they're going to have their young and protect their young. Animals use their teeth to carry their young. Be really difficult to carry a baby without teeth, right?
That's right, just gumming them.
Yeah, right.
You're right.
So they need that. They use their teeth even when they're breeding, when they're mating, the male to grab the scruff of the female. They use their teeth to bare their teeth to show dominance or aggression.
Right.
And so interspecies communication is really important for, you know, we're using them for grooming. If you think about little bats. Bats, you know, oftentimes will use their teeth to bite off things that they've groomed off their body with their little toes. And so really important that they have good, you know, dentition and no, they don't have painful teeth in there so that they can groom appropriately. Mm-hmm. So all of these little things that we just don't really consider, you know, that animals use their teeth for, and these are really important functions. And if we can't do these functions properly in the wild, that's going to, you know, set them up potentially for failure.
All right. So. And you're exactly right. I mean, I'm always thinking about grooming. We got to make sure that they can groom and make sure that they can do that so they're releasable, but not really connecting, that they have to have teeth that are serviceable in that area, right? You said pain, making sure that they're not painful, and or that they have the teeth.
Right,
that they,
absolutely.
That they need.
And yeah, and obviously, you know, hunting is a big thing, and we'll chat a little bit more about that, you know, kind of how important are teeth for hunting. It depends on the species. It really does. And I'll talk a little bit more about that later of how we kind of judge, you know, when we're looking at extracting teeth, how many we can extract and that animal's still going to, you know, be successful in the wild, catching their prey, you know, and apprehending food and all of those things.
Right.
So we have to think about that. But yeah, obviously hunting and eating is going to be a very big part in health, you know, having health of their teeth.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So you mentioned makeup of a tooth. I mean, we need to know kind of what are the pieces and parts of a tooth?
Right. So we have our outer enamel layer, which is very, very hard substance. The hardest substance is in the body, okay? So typically our enamel's white in a healthy tooth, but can be discolored or have some staining just depending on species, and sometimes that's very normal. So that's really good to know too, normal versus abnormal teeth and what they're supposed to look like for certain species. So for example, California sea lions do develop a dark pigmentation on their enamel as they age, and that's very normal. So an adult sea lion is going to have kind of chocolate brown teeth, and if I were to see that coloration in, you know, say a raccoon, that would be very abnormal.
Right.
So good to know those species differences. So we have our enamel. The enamel does not have any nerves in it or blood supply. Okay. So it's just a very, very hard substance that's protecting the outer kind of layer or surface of the tooth. Below the enamel, we have dentin, which is a softer, more porous substance. Mm-hmm. And then deep below that, we have our pulp. And that is where the nerves and blood supply live that nourish the tooth. Mm-hmm. And so that's the area that we get very concerned about when we have fractured teeth or diseased teeth is that pulp chamber, that pulp cavity exposed or affected by that disease process. And so those are really the three main layers of the tooth. Mm-hmm. So it's pretty simple. And then we have the tooth sits in bone. And so there's a periodontal ligament, so a really strong ligament that goes around the tooth that holds it into the bone. Okay. And so those teeth are not meant to be moving a lot. Every now and then there are some species that there's normal movement of the teeth, mm-hmm. but for the most part, they are seated in that bone and that's where they want to live. That's something we have to keep in mind too when we're removing teeth is that we got to get in there and get all this bone out of the way to get that tooth out. So it can be pretty complicated to extract these teeth. It's not very easy to just pluck them out.
Right.
They live, you know, and are cemented almost in this bone layer within the jaw.
How is that different? Is there something anatomically that's slightly different when you're talking about young animals, let's say a fox kit,
sure.
and they've got baby teeth.
Sure.
And is that different?
So a little bit, yep. So with young teeth, we typically have open roots. So their roots aren't completely sealed closed yet. Okay. So they're open. Their pulp chamber is much wider. They can be a little softer. Okay. And so they're not as anchored into the bone yet. Mm-hmm. And then once they lose those baby teeth and those adult teeth emerge, those are the ones that are going to be really anchored in that bone. So okay. yes, you're right. There's okay. a slight difference
Great.
There. Yeah.
Great. I was wondering, I just mm-hmm. gotten a new puppy with very
oh,
sharp
yes.
puppy teeth.
Very, very sharp teeth.
Very uh-huh. sharp mm-hmm. puppy teeth.
They're very fragile too, right?
Right?
And that's something we have to be very careful of is what are we giving? You know, when we talk to pet owners about their puppies or kittens, what are we giving them to chew on right now? Probably right. shouldn't be giving deer antlers because they can break their teeth and it still is painful. They still have the nerves and blood supply in those baby teeth. And it's painful if they break, so you have to be very careful about things like that. And, you know, it's interesting, too, because not all animals have the same number of baby teeth versus adult teeth. And so it's easy to think, okay, every adult tooth has a baby tooth associated with it, but that's not the case.
Wow,
so,
I did not know
yes,
that.
Yes, if we're looking at opossums, okay. I'm going to talk about opossums a lot because they're Good. My favorite and their teeth are amazing.
uh-huh.
And they always need the most dental care. They actually only have one baby tooth that lives in their mouth, and it's one of their premolars.
Okay.
The rest of their teeth are adult teeth. So when you get these itty-bitty baby possums that have teeth in there, majority of those are their adult teeth. So, yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, right.
That's
so
amazing.
So they just got that one little set that they're going to lose, and that's it. Yes.
Oh, my gosh. There's all kinds of questions
I
there.
I know. So, yeah, it's just, you know, I think with wildlife, you know, you mentioned, you know, the variety of wildlife is what keeps our job so interesting, right?
Right.
And, like, just never knowing. And the challenges that wildlife medicine brings, that's what I love about it, too. And mm-hmm. just kind of figuring out, okay, all these species, they're different. They all have differences. And we have to realize that and know that and do our research and study up. Because if we just assume every animal's going to be the same with their dentition and the same with, you know, baby teeth versus adult teeth, you know, we could get in some trouble there. So, you know, knowing those species differences is going to be really important and something I can't stress enough of just doing your research.
Right.
Yeah, knowing what's normal versus abnormal so that you don't look at something, you're like, ah, that's a diseased tooth, but actually that's normal for that animal.
And actually for a lot of mammals,
mm-hmm.
a lot of that, especially with teeth,
mm-hmm.
a lot of that stuff has been done, mm-hmm. right? You know,
yep. right.
That,
right.
And most of what we're seeing is
yes.
common species, so we're mm-hmm. not seeing something that's very uncommon,
right.
that may not have some research behind it,
right.
but a lot of the identification books and
yes.
things like that will
yep.
have, you know, talking about teeth and
yes.
what it looks like, especially if you find a skull or something.
Right,
you're trying to
yeah.
figure out what it is.
That's a good way to identify an animal.
It
I
is.
Mean, you can narrow it down at least to this is an herbivore versus, you know, an omnivore versus a true carnivore.
Right.
By looking at the shape of the teeth and how they're situated and the canines and
right.
the number of teeth. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I always stress is that to me, natural history,
mm-hmm.
which we've been talking about actually yeah. all along here, is one of the most important aspects of wildlife rehabilitation.
Right.
Because it really helps. Doesn't tell you all the answers, but it
right.
helps tell you a lot
mm-hmm.
About what these animals need to go back out into the wild.
Yes.
And that, of course, includes the teeth.
Absolutely.
For sure.
Yes. Yes.
So we have kind of the pieces and parts
yep.
of
yep.
Of a tooth.
Right.
And I'm going to do a really bad pun.
Okay.
We're going to drill down.
Oh, boy.
I know. I couldn't help it. I couldn't help it. We're going to drill down
yes.
and talking about, like, whether it's the makeup of the teeth, like you have different kinds of teeth in your mouth.
Right.
And so I thought we could explore that just a little bit.
Yeah, absolutely. Yes. So different kinds of teeth. There are different, we'll talk a little bit about dental formulas because there's different numbers of teeth, right? And kind of what is the function of these different types of teeth, and then also some teeth that grow continuously and some teeth that don't. So, you know, when we're looking at dentition, let's start with, you know, kind of the types of teeth. So most animals have incisors, which are typically the smaller teeth in the front. And those are responsible for scooping and kind of gathering food.
Okay.
Okay. That's kind of their main function, is just to scoop and gather and kind of push it into the mouth. And then some species have canines, not all, but the canine teeth are responsible for kind of puncturing and biting into meat usually. Mm-hmm. So the definition of our canines, or I guess the structure of the canine, can really give us an idea into an animal's, you know, preferred meals. So we know that carnivores have very sharp canines and very pointed and obvious canines because they're meat eaters and they need those canines to really pull and shred and pull apart that meat. If you look at human canines, we don't have big pointy canines like our true carnivores, right? I mean, we eat meat, some of us do, but that we're omnivores, you know? And so we can eat vegetation, we can eat meat, we can choose, you know, what we want to eat. And so, but we're not designed to eat just meat.
Right.
Like say a tiger would be. So our canines are not going to be as well defined. And then we have premolars and molars. And so those are, you know, kind of called the cheek teeth because they live back in the back of the mouth in the cheek area. And again, those are going to be structured based on what the animal is eating. So if we're looking at an animal that's an herbivore, that's just eating vegetation, their premolars and molars are going to be very flattened. And if we're looking at an omnivore, we might see a little more kind of sharp areas in those cheek teeth. So if we're looking at like an opossum or raccoon, they're going to have a little more well-defined points and sharp areas. And then if we're looking at our true carnivores, then they're going to have really pointy premolars and molars because they're using those for shearing of meat.
Okay.
So after they puncture and tear apart with their canines, it goes to the back of the mouth, and then those premolars and molars kind of rub together to just shear into that meat into smaller pieces for them to swallow.
Okay.
So those are kind of the different functions of the different types of teeth. So incisors, canines, premolars, and molars. And then if we're looking at like rabbits, for instance, rabbits are herbivores. Okay, and we have some rodents that are strictly herbivores as well. Those guys, they don't have canine teeth. They have incisors, and then they have cheek teeth. And their teeth are actually continuously growing. So they're open-rooted. So if we're looking at a carnivorous mammal or an omnivorous mammal, their roots of their teeth are closed.
Right.
But in these animals that have continuously growing teeth, they have open-rooted structure, and they're continuously growing because they eat such rough, fibrous food that they're continuously wearing at their enamel. And so if their teeth didn't continuously grow, they would be worn down to the gum line in no time.
Wow.
So the body has to continue to regenerate that enamel so that they actually have crown present to eat. Rabbits and herbivorous rodents have continuously growing incisors and cheek teeth. If we're looking at omnivorous rodents, they just have continuously growing incisors, but their cheek teeth do not continuously grow because they just don't need as much because they're not eating all that rough fibrous food. But, you know, and horses would be another example of, you know, animals that have really long crowns because they're eating such fibrous food and that enamel gets worn down really easily. So, you know, again, knowing the species you're working with and what's normal is really important. And knowing, okay, if I have a rabbit come in with a fractured incisor, it's probably going to grow back, right? Which is amazing.
We're just going to
watch your teeth as they continue to grow in and obviously do some trimming and things like that to make sure that things stay aligned with their top and bottom incisors. So just knowing kind of, again, what's normal for that species so that you know what to expect if they come in with oral trauma and problems.
Right.
So that's kind of basics of the different types of teeth and how they function and and work.
Oh my God, that's amazing.
Yeah.
Okay. So beaver.
Yeah.
I got to talk about beaver.
I love beavers.
I love beavers so
much. They got big ol' incisors.
Big, oh my gosh.
Yes.
At one point, I'm going to tell a story, but not today about when my husband, who was a conservation officer, and I were rescuing a beaver, and he got bit.
Oh.
And he got bit by those incisors. It hurt.
I'm sure.
Yeah, there's some swear words involved. But
I hope he still has all his fingers.
He has all of his fingers. He's got a scar that he talks about and tells the stories with.
See, I've been bitten by a squirrel, and that was painful enough. I cannot imagine a beaver.
Yep. I will have to tell that story sometime. But have him on and have him tell the story. But my question is why are beavers' teeth orange?
Yes. So some rodents do have an orange pigmentation of their teeth. That's actually iron deposit. So that's very normal for that species. And if we are seeing lack of that iron deposit, that can mean a nutritional deficiency in that animal.
Okay.
So again, one more thing that we need to know. This is normal, and if we're not seeing it, it could mean this. And not all rodents have the orange pigment, but, you know, a lot of them do. So again, knowing which ones do, which ones don't, you know, so that we can better, you know, get an idea of are these teeth healthy or not.
Right.
But yes, that bright orange or, you know, some may call it yellow pigment is very normal.
Right.
Yeah.
Excellent. No, I love beaver.
I do too.
You know, and we were trying to rescue that beaver, so it wasn't his fault. He was a little scared. It makes a great story.
Yes.
So when I listened to your lecture, one of the things that you went over, I listened to it again to try to understand it better, is the dental formula.
Yes.
So could you explain a little bit about what that is and then how that all gets figured out?
So
why
it's important. The dental formula is the way we calculate how many teeth are in the mouth. So what we do is you count the teeth on one side, either the upper or lower. They may be different. But both sides of the upper are going to be the same. Same number of teeth on both sides of the upper, same number of teeth on both sides of the lower. So we count one side of the upper, and how many teeth do we have? So how many incisors do we have, canines, premolars, and molars? And then we multiply that by 2 to account for the other side. And then we go down to the bottom, and again, we count how many incisors, how many canines, how many premolars, how many molars, and divide or multiply that by 2. And then we add that all together, those two, to get our total.
Right.
So, you know, if we're looking at, say, for instance, a dog, looking in a dog mouth. So we look at the top half, we've got 3 incisors, 1 canine, 4 premolars, and 3 molars.
Okay.
So then we're going to multiply that by 2. And then we're going to go down to the bottom. We've got 3 incisors, 1 canine, 4 premolars, and 4 molars. So then we multiply that by 2 and then add them together to get our total of 42 teeth in the dog mouth. So that's kind of how the dental formula works, and different species have different dental formulas.
Okay.
So, you know, cats have 30 teeth, opossums have 50 teeth.
I just love that about opossums.
I do too.
That they have
so many, and that's why I don't feel so bad taking one or two, because I'm like, you have so many teeth, and you're an omnivore,
and you're
gonna
an omnivore.
Great.
That's right.
You're gonna
do
just great.
And that is the most number of teeth, right, in North America?
Yes, in North American land mammal. Yes, 50. It's a lot. People are always amazed to hear that, and I always quiz our students on that. How many teeth do you think an opossum has, you know, as we're doing a dental? And I get a lot of, like, low balls. I get a lot of, like, 32 or, you know, maybe 40. Like, they clearly can't have more than a dog.
Right.
And then when I tell them 50, their minds are just blown.
That's probably one of the reasons they have a long snout, right? Long nose, so they can smell everything.
Yep.
But they need room for those teeth.
Yes, they do. And they're very tightly packed in there, too. And it's interesting because they are omnivores. Their premolars and molars almost look identical to each other.
Oh.
So if I were to pull all the teeth out and set them on the table, it'd be difficult to tell that's a premolar versus a molar.
Okay.
They look very similar because of their omnivorous lifestyle.
Sure,
you know?
Sure.
So,
makes sense.
Yeah.
Wow. Mm-hmm. Good. We are going to sneak across here and there and everywhere.
Yes.
So, so we have the makeup of a tooth.
Mm-hmm.
We have the different types of teeth.
Yep.
We have the dental formula.
Yes.
And you said something on the lecture about dentition. What does that mean?
Yes. So our dentition is going to be more of, you're talking like heterodont versus our elodont versus, So heterodont dentition is just kind of a big fancy word for having different types of teeth.
Okay.
So not all of our teeth look the same. When we look in our mouth, our incisors look different than our canines, which look different than premolars and molars. And then the elodont dentition is going to be like our rabbits and some of our rodent species that have continuously growing teeth.
Mm-hmm.
So that's kind of another way that we can kind of differentiate or better specify what kind of dentition they have,
right,
is they have elodont dentition. And then there's also brachydont dentition, which talks about more of crown length.
Okay.
So that just divvies it up a little bit more about primates have very short crowns. We don't have much crown. You know, I mean, to us, it looks like a lot, but when you compare it to a horse,
right,
you know, they have a lot more crown present than we do. So that dentition is just talking about different ways we can kind of categorize an animal's mouth, basically, and what kind of teeth they have.
Right.
Yeah, and how if their teeth are continuously growing or not.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, that just helps all the way through, right?
Yes.
All the different
yeah.
types so that you can really categorize.
Right.
And those are great words.
Yeah.
I love those words.
Yeah.
So how is there a way, we've got all these different types of teeth,
mm-hmm.
is there a way to age an animal via its teeth? I have a horse. I know
yeah.
a horse you can.
Yeah. Yes.
But I don't know about
it
others.
It can be tricky. Yes. You know, obviously we can age an animal by knowing, okay, do you have deciduous teeth still present or not? But again, it may not be a useful way in all species because like the opossums, like I said, only have one set of deciduous teeth. So they're kind of born with most of their adult teeth. But in a lot of species, we can look at eruption time of their teeth to get a better idea of aging. So raccoons, foxes, coyotes, you know, when they're coming in as kits and pups, we can look at their dentition to get a better idea of how old they are. You know, are you 6 weeks? Are you 8 weeks? Are you 12 weeks, 16 weeks? So that gives us kind of a rough estimate at least.
Mm-hmm.
And there are great resources out there with eruption times of all the teeth and when those typically come in, the adult ones.
Right.
And then with some animals, we're looking at wearing. And, you know, they'll develop different kind of cusps and ridges on their enamel as they age and as they mature. And so sometimes that's a good way to age them. Staining and coloration, that's normal for the animal. So again, the sea lions, you know, we're looking at that brown coloration to develop on the enamel as they age. So that can give us a rough estimate.
Mm-hmm.
And then just general wear and tear on the teeth. I mean,
right.
you're going to see more wear and tear, you know, on older animals that have maybe been through, you know, some life experiences, maybe been through some battles.
Right.
And so that can give us kind of an estimate. It can be hard to, like, nail it down to an exact age sometimes.
Sure.
With the babies, it's a little easier. But with the adults, it can be difficult to really nail it down. But I can get usually a pretty good estimate of, like, an age range at least by looking mm-hmm. at the teeth and the wear and tear and staining and all that.
Right.
So, yeah.
Cool.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, thank you.
Yeah.
Okay. So aging an animal with teeth, and we've talked about opossums a little bit and mm-hmm. touched on. Do you have like a favorite, and we have talked about opossums,
yeah,
but
yeah.
other favorite things that you like to see when you're looking at teeth?
Yeah.
You're looking and you're like, oh,
I get really excited about fractures just because trauma is going to be the most common reason that a wild animal needs dental attention.
Right.
We don't often see a lot of like, you just have really heavy tartar buildup or periodontal disease that we see with our pets because
sure.
these animals are eating what they're supposed to be eating out in the wild. You know, they're doing a good job of maintaining their own oral health. And so really why we're seeing these problems a lot of times is trauma related. And so I get excited when I see a broken tooth because I know I get to probably pull it, and that's fun for me. And I know it's going to help the animal.
And it's good all the way around.
It is.
Right?
It is. So that's probably the thing I get most excited about mm-hmm. is if, you know, right now, like I said, I'm doing some relief work at the clinic, so they'll text me a picture, and I get really excited when they're like, oh, this one needs to come out. I'm like, yes, it does.
I'll be right over.
I'll be there. Yes. You know, some other really interesting things that I have found that maybe weren't exciting, but were just really interesting is, for instance, I have found a couple oral masses and opossums especially. They can get squamous cell carcinoma in their mouth. And so, you know, when we're doing our good oral exam, we can find things like that.
Sure.
And obviously that's a bad prognostic indicator for that animal. But interesting to see and interesting to find and get that information of kind of how prevalent is this cancer in
nice.
Opossums. So that's been something interesting I've found. A couple times I've found foreign bodies in the mouth. So mm-hmm. stick or a bone of an animal that they've eaten that gets lodged up in their palate.
Right.
And so that's kind of fun to find. Fish hooks are always fun to find. I love fish hooks. I will remove fish hooks all day long. So if I find a fish hook in the mouth, I'm on it.
That's awesome.
Right. So foreign things, foreign bodies.
Mm-hmm.
You know, malocclusions, we can see some of, and those are always sad because oftentimes, you know, we see a lot of congenital malocclusions, especially with like baby squirrels.
Right.
And that is something that we don't have a treatment or cure for.
Right.
And those animals, you know, do get euthanized because those malocclusions will be chronic and they will always have crooked teeth. And
right. Could you explain what a malocclusion
is? Yeah. So a malocclusion is when the teeth aren't lining up properly. So in rodents and rabbits especially, we're looking at their incisors. So those are the big teeth in the front on the top and bottom. And if those teeth don't line up appropriately and wear on each other appropriately, they'll continue to grow in an abnormal direction.
Mm-hmm.
And then they'll grow so long that they can actually start curling. And I've seen animals come in that their malocclusion was so severe that the tooth had curved back towards their face and was actually puncturing into their cheek.
Wow.
So usually they're malocluded because of a jaw malformation, which can be a congenital deformity, especially
sure.
in juvenile squirrels. And, you know, in that case, we can't reconstruct their jaw. And so euthanasia is the most humane option for those animals because their teeth will just continuously grow abnormally.
Yeah, I mean, you could trim them.
You could trim them, but in the wild, nobody's out there to trim them.
Right.
And they'll starve to death. So.
Right.
You know, if we have an animal come in that maybe has a normal jaw formation but had trauma, that broken incisor, you know, we can see malocclusion if we don't keep the others trimmed as that new one is growing in. But that's something we can typically manage with some trimmings, and we do monitor them for several weeks to make sure their teeth are lining up appropriately, that everything's grown in appropriately. But, you know, another reason we could see some malocclusions that we don't typically see in wild animals but in domestic rabbits and rodents is if they're are fed an improper diet. And so sometimes people will have their rabbits, let's say, on just pellets, and they're not getting much for hay. So again, their cheek teeth especially are not grinding appropriately, so then they get overgrown cheek teeth, and then that can cause malocclusion in the cheek teeth. They can get overgrown incisors and get malocclusion there too.
Right.
But again, with those animals, you know, they can have those teeth, you know, monitored and trimmed continuously and even removed, and they do great. But we cannot remove an incisor on a wild rabbit or a wild rodent and release them because, again, you remove an incisor, now you don't have that balance, and those other incisors are going to overgrow, and the animal is going to have difficulty apprehending food, and they're going to starve to death. So we never, ever remove incisors on wild rabbits and rodents.
Right.
Yeah.
Makes total sense.
Yeah.
Yeah. Thanks for that explanation. That was really good. Really good.
Yeah.
Do you have any top pro tips or favorite things about teeth? We're going to get into dental exam.
Okay.
But
perfect.
And kinds of things you look for and that kind of thing.
Sure.
But anything that you would like to that we haven't talked about yet that you'd like to get out there?
Yeah. Top pro tips. I mean, I think one of my best tips would be, you know, we'll talk about how to do a good oral exam, but certainly, you know, getting into dentistry and deciding when and if to remove teeth and how to remove teeth definitely, you know, takes some skill and practice, and, you know, finding somebody who's passionate about it and wants to, you know, do that work is really, really important. Like, this is something that should not just be attempted by anyone because it is a surgical procedure that does require, you know, some technique. And we don't want to further injure the animal too. So, you know, definitely one of my tips is just to make sure you have a dentist that you're working with or, you know, a veterinarian that's really interested in dentistry that can do these procedures. And, you know, I feel like I've been branching out a little bit more into what I'm willing to maybe try a little bit more with. So, for instance, we had a bat a couple months ago that had a broken tooth.
Uh-huh.
And I was approached of, hey, do you want to try to do something with this bat?
Mm-hmm.
Bats are very, very tiny. It's a big brown bat.
But at least it was a big brown bat.
It was a big brown, at least, yes. But, oh, my gosh. I forgot how teeny tiny their little mouths and teeth are until I, you know, did an exam on him, or her, as a female. So, you know, kind of thinking was, my thinking in my brain was, okay, well, I've never done any dental procedures on a bat. Mm-hmm. I have no idea how this is going to go. We're very, very tiny, so I cannot use my usual methods of removal here because we'll shatter her jaw. How are we going to do this? But again, this comes back to the challenges of our profession. Right. Of how can we help this animal? The other option is euthanasia for her. Right. Okay, she had a very bad canine fracture, pulp exposed. This is painful, and you know, a source of infection. So, sure, why not? Let's try it and see what happens. Understanding that euthanasia may be an option if this does not go well.
Right.
And so we actually, you know, the first challenge was getting the bat intubated because it's so teeny tiny.
Yeah, you can't like put a comb
right
over his
and
little face.
No,
or little face and
yeah,
then work in the mouth.
I gotta be in the mouth, and right. You know, I'm not trusting just injectable anesthesia on this thing because it's a bat, and I would have my fingers in there. So it needs to be intubated, and for airway safety as well, right? So. You know, the vets at WRC were awesome and figured out a way to safely intubate the bat. And so then it came the challenge of, well, how do we get this tooth out of here safely without further injuring this bat?
Right.
And so tried a couple different things, like with some needles, trying to elevate this tooth out, and it was not going well. And any movement on the bat itself, you know, the tube is slipping, the E-tube,
right.
And so all these little things that we kind of had to come together to figure out how to do. What we ultimately ended up doing for the bat that worked the best was a crown amputation of her tooth. And what that means is we actually amputate the tooth at the level of the gum line where the crown is. And then ideally, you know, you'd go in and kind of freshen up the gingival edges and close over that area because there's still a little root tip in there.
Right.
Which, you know, our goal is usually to get the whole tooth out, including the root. But in this case, because she was so teeny tiny and I didn't want to injure her further, this was going to be the best option.
Right.
And you can do crown amputations if you need to, but, you know, ideally you'd get the root tip out. And with this case, this was going to be her best option was to crown amp and kind of hope for the best. So we crown amped, and then her little gingiva is just so teeny tiny. I mean, there was really nothing even there to close. So I tried to go as close to the gum line as I could, and it healed over really well. She did great. She was eating on her own and did wonderful. And I released her a couple weeks ago. So,
oh, well, congratulations.
Thank you.
That is an amazing story.
So that's the teeniest thing I've worked on.
Wow.
Yes.
And bats are like my specialty in rehab.
I know,
so
right?
Thank you.
Yes,
thank you
of course.
Oh my gosh.
Of course.
That just warms my heart.
Yes.
Like, I can't even tell you.
I'm glad it went so well.
Yeah.
And now we know for the next one, like, hey, we can do this. I'm like, if we can do a bat, we can do anything.
Can
so,
do anything.
Yes. Yeah.
Be
it
careful
went really well.
What you wish for.
I know. The next thing they're going to want me to do is a mouse.
A mouse or a shrew or something like that.
Yeah, right?
Can get smaller.
Yes, but. It's good. So I think, you know, another tip is just to kind of have an open mind about trying some new things, that's kind of what our profession is about sometimes. It's trial and error with some things.
Right.
We don't have a lot of good, you know, resources in some areas of like, this is how you remove a tooth on a bat.
Right.
You know, I tried to search. I found obviously information about their dentition, but I'm like, how big are your roots? Where do they go? And it was really difficult to find that information. So then I had to kind of take what I know and the skills I had and modify a plan for this little creature to try to get her back out into the wild where she belongs. So, you know, it's just good to have that open mind, and it's okay to try some new things, you know, if it's going to hopefully benefit that animal in the long run, especially if your other option is euthanasia, you might as well try.
I love that, but
yeah.
I totally agree.
Yep.
Wildlife rehabilitation sometimes is trial and error. But
yeah.
the thing that struck me is you did the research.
Yeah.
You tried to see what was already out there. My guess is you talked
right.
to a few people too.
Yes.
And you worked out a plan that was a thoughtful plan,
yep.
not just, well, we're just going to...
Let's just wing it. Yes, yes.
And so that's the difference between...
Right.
I mean, yes, it's trial and error.
Yeah.
And best chance for this animal. But at the same time,
mm-hmm.
it also had a method.
Right.
You know, you're taking your background and then, you know,
yep.
trying to get a lot of other resources involved for the yeah. best answer.
Right.
For
right.
this animal.
Yes,
so,
very
yeah,
important to do that.
Mm-hmm. I love that. So.
Yeah.
Oh, my gosh. So this has been phenomenal. And I know more about teeth than I ever knew. Good. I thought I knew a little bit.
Fun.
Teeth are very fun. Are very fun.
Yes.
So I want to thank you for being here.
Of course.
And everyone, we're going to get more excited about teeth here in just a minute. Or in the next episode.
Thanks for joining us for another episode of Wildlife Rehabilitation from Rescue to Release Season 2. That was Dr. Leslie Reed, a Minnesota-based veterinarian who divides her time between domestic small animal medicine and wildlife dentistry. We decided to divide our conversation into two parts, so I hope you'll tune in later this month for part two. We will cover topics like pain control, root canals, finding careers in wildlife dentistry, and more. Also, we're currently working on topics for season 3. If you have ideas, please let me know. You can email me at gailbuell@umn.edu. I'll put a link in the show notes. I would love to hear from you. Wildlife Rehabilitation from Rescue to Release is a production of Partners for Wildlife, working hand in hand with wildlife rehabilitators and veterinarians to improve the welfare of orphaned, ill, and injured wildlife. Our executive producer is me, Gail Buell. I'm the partnership coordinator for Partners for Wildlife at the University of Minnesota College of Veterinary Medicine's Raptor Center. To learn more about the Raptor Center and Partners for Wildlife, visit raptor.umn.edu. Our producer is Kirk Clocky. Special thanks to our guest, Dr. Leslie Reed. Also to Partners for Wildlife and the Raptor Center at the University of Minnesota College of Veterinary Medicine. And that's our show. Hope you'll join us again next time.